Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, June 9th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway stars James Marino.
James, I got a fever. Tony fever. And the only prescription is more podcasts. Later today, hopefully, we will be releasing Broadway Radio's first ever Tony Awards omnibus episode, where James and or I talk to over a dozen theater podcasters about their specific point of view on this season's Broadway shows. It's going to be a long, in-depth podcast, and we look at this Broadway season from every angle. It is long, but I think we got some great insight from some incredibly smart people. So start looking for that episode in your feed around noon and or follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and we will let you know when it goes live.
I hear that it's the only podcast longer than the actual Tonys.
That was the goal.
All right, let's get going. CBS reveals the Tony performances.
Yeah, yesterday CBS announced the performers for Sunday's Tony's telecast, and they included the casts of Shuffle Along, She Loves Me, School of Rock, Fiddler on the Roof, The Color Purple, Hamilton, Waitress, Bright Star, Spring Awakening, and On Your Feet, who will be joined by Gloria Estefan. James, I'm ecstatic that all of these shows will get a chance to perform in front of Broadway's biggest television audience. But those last two shows on the list are kind of interesting to me. Going in reverse order of them, we had heard rumors that because of the show being kind of already somewhat bloated and a lot of shows were angling to perform on this year's telecast, that the producers were telling musicals that only those nominated for Best Musical, Best Revival of a Musical, would be eligible to perform on the show. Now, even though we've had a few musicals closed recently, none of them were nominated for those awards. So the fact that On Your Feet is performing, did the Tony's producers change their minds, or were they swayed by a legend like Gloria Estefan agreeing to perform with their cast? I don't know, but it's kind of interesting, and I'm really glad because it only got one nomination, but it's selling great and people are loving it. So I'm excited to see it get an opportunity to show itself on stage. But then there's the curious case of the Spring Awakening Kickstarter. As we reported earlier this month, producer Ken Davenport and the nominated revival of Spring Awakening started a crowdfunding campaign to help the long-closed show cover the cost of performing at the Tonys. That campaign's goal was to pull in $200,000 from supporters. Well, since this announcement, many in the Broadway community have bristled at Davenport's move, insinuating that he is essentially having fans pay for a six-figure commercial to promote a planned national tour, something that should fall on the shoulders of the show's producers and investors. Well, when CBS announced Sunday's performances, the Spring Awakening Kickstarter had not yet met its $200,000 goal, and it still had over 3.5 days left. Now, the campaign has since met its goal, either by a rush of $27 Bernie Sanders supporting donations, or maybe one or two deep-pocketed producers who are waiting till the very end to cover the remaining cost. This is kind of a strange set of circumstances, and it has led a lot of people to throw Benanti-level side-eye over at the Spring Awakening producers. Either way, I don't think there's anyone who's not happy that the Spring Awakening cast is going to get to perform. But this shell game three-card money of having a crowdfunding thing kind of support an eventual tour, it seems a little shady. A lot of people are not too happy about it, James.
So I don't know about the Kickstarter campaign. I thought it was being run by Def West, not Ken Davenport. Do you know any details of that?
I think technically it is, but Ken Davenport has been pushing it very hard on his blog and on social media. So I would imagine that anything that's done was done in conjunction. Now, it very well could be that a lot of people have raised the question of, because Def West is a not-for-profit theater, that running it through them as opposed to Ken Davenport, who is a commercial producer, might allow them to use the money for different things. That is way beyond my area of expertise, but it is some of the things that people are uncomfortable with when it comes to supporting a show that they loved, but not exactly sure that they're doing it the right way.
Well, you know, Kickstarter gets a part of that. I would think that if there is some sort of nonprofit angle, they might want to go with Fractured Atlas or some other type of fundraising capability that has got a nonprofit angle to it. But I guess We'll just have to see what happens there. I mean, that, you know,
I don't know what to say. I mean, this is not my area of expertise, But it is interesting. I mean, I think, you know, when this came out, I said I was really excited because I thought, okay, if they're doing this, this is the only way that Spring Awakenings get to perform. And I was all in favor of that. But now as some of the layers of the onion continue to get peeled back, people start raising some very serious questions that, I mean, I'm not saying rises to the legal definition of fraud, but it does seem like some wool's being pulled over, you know, some Broadway fans' eyes, mine included. And it gives you a little kind of sour taste in your mouth. And it's too bad because I'm super excited to see this cast perform on Sunday night.
I am too. I'm looking forward to that. But it's the end of the season and people are tired and they all get catty.
Oh, I see what you did there. As if this production hasn't been plagued by enough drama already, in a new interview with London's The Stage, legendary choreographer Gillian Lynn, who staged the original productions of Cats, as well as the ballet-centered Phantom of the Opera, is none too pleased that Tony nominee Andy Blankenbuehler would be choreographing the new Broadway revival of Cats based on her original choreography. Now, to be clear, Lynn has no problem with Blankenbuehler saying that he is brilliant, but she's upset that the Broadway producers, of which Andrew Lloyd Webber is not one, have claimed that the show needs, quote, amazing changes, despite the recent success in multiple productions at the London Palladium. Lynn is not happy that her original choreography is going to be recreated by someone else, and they have not asked for her input. Lynn also said that she had visited the Broadway cast early on in the rehearsal process and was very concerned that they had not yet been schooled on how to move like Cats. I don't know what it is, James, but this show can't avoid drama. Is it the show itself? Is it Andrew Lloyd Webber? Is it just that time of year? What is going on with Cats?
I'm thinking this is great marketing.
Do you think ALW?
You know what we haven't talked about? You know what we haven't talked about?
What's that?
Did we ever follow up on the protest?
You know, we didn't. We have not done. When was that supposed scheduled to be? We need to check that out.
I don't recall. I was going to look it up the other day, and I lost. I got distracted, and I forgot about it. But I think that there's some awesome marketing going on with Cats right now.
Yeah, I will get in touch with Andrew Bredis, annoying actor friend, and see what's going on with that, since he is the one who stole that email address. So I'll check in on that, and we'll report back tomorrow.
All right. If you do find out that information, let us know if it's Finding Neverland.
That one made no sense. I know you've been up since 4 a.m. because that made zero sense, James.
In my head, that made a total amount of sense. What did I just say?
I don't know. In an underwhelming and kind of rushed announcement on yesterday's Today Show on NBC, Tony Yazbek announced that he would be taking over the role of J.M. Barrie in Broadway's Finding Neverland beginning tomorrow. Friday, June 10th, he's replacing Alfie Beau. Are you laughing at my stomach?
Friday. I'm too tired.
You are. Also, Paul Slade Smith and Dana Costello would be replacing James, your boy, Mark Kudish and Teal Wicks as Charles Frohman / Captain Hook and Mary Barry, respectively. Tony Yazbek played the role of J.M. Barrie earlier this year, and Finding Neverland is scheduled to play at the La Fontaine Theater through August 21st.
All right. Miss Saigon group ticket sales went on sale.
Yeah, so I guess this is happening. Group tickets are now on sale for the upcoming Broadway revival of Miss Saigon, slated to begin performances in a Schubert Theater, be named later in spring of 2017. Currently, the engagement is scheduled to run just through January 15th of 2018 before the launch of a national tour, but I have a feeling that if it's a success, they will find a way to keep it around just a little bit longer. Single tickets will be made available to the public this fall. After a triumphant West End run, the show will star Eva Nobilzada. Sorry, James, pronounce that one for me.
Eva Nobilzada.
Okay, there you go. Eva Nobilzada as Kim and John Brioins as the engineer. For more information on the production and for group sales info, visit www.saigonbroadway.com.
So throwing out group ticket sales on sale now does a handful of things. It kind of takes the temperature insofar as the interest for this revival. And will help them plan, schedule, and sure, things like that. One thing that people don't understand about group ticket sales is that group ticket sales organizations will come in and say, "Yeah, we'll take 100 for this date and 100 for that date," and it's just a non-confirmed commitment.
Right.
and that they can cancel at any time. So it's really not a big deal. So the London Critics report on the Cursed Child first preview.
Yeah, James, I know that New York critics have been pushing the limits of what is considered acceptable for them to cover in recent years, but I can't imagine this happening in New York. I told everyone yesterday that the world premiere production of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child Parts 1 and 2 had its first performance in the West End on Tuesday. Well, a number of critics from rather esteemed outlets decided that, convention be damned, they were going to report on what they saw at Part 1, since Part 2 hadn't even been performed by the time they wrote their articles. The New York Times' Rosalind Sulkis reported that the three main characters familiar to movie fans, quote, are true to their younger selves. Ron still provides comic relief, Hermione remains cerebral and slightly bossy, and Harry tries as hard as he can but doesn't quite live up to his own expectations. She continues, the audience at the Palace Theater here cannot be more thrilled or more appreciative or more ready to be caught up in the spirit of the undertaking. Hannah Furness of The Telegraph wrote, those who praised the diverse casting were richly rewarded, with around a quarter of the cast and several key characters from ethnic minority backgrounds. As the lights went down, the audience burst into spontaneous applause, whooping with excitement. A standing ovation to finish was a foregone conclusion. The storyline, a hymn to friendship and teenage misfits, contains enough twists to please the knowledgeable of fans, the most knowledgeable of fans, I apologize, who remained resolutely tight-lipped about the plot as they spilled onto the pavement in raptures afterwards. Any fear that the world of Hogwarts on stage would struggle to compete with the multi-million-dollar special effects of film were quickly kicked into touch. I don't know what that idiom exactly means, but I think it means that they were cast aside. Finally, Claire Fitzsimmons of The Mirror wrote that the show's children steal the show all along, with all the drama of the books and films, a lot of laughs, and some fantastic special effects. She continues, J.K. Rowling has made sure the audience will be back for Part 2 with a cliffhanger ending at the first part. And if the second is anywhere near as good as the first, there can be no other verdict. The child may be cursed, but this show most definitely isn't. Now, I read through all of those to show you that they didn't really give a whole lot away, but they got fairly specific about some of the things they were talking about. James, I know these comments don't necessarily rise to the level of a full review, but this seems to be more than crossing the line in terms of what is appropriate to cover during a show's preview period.
You know, people have been arguing this for many, many years, as long as I can remember, you know, especially with producers charging full price for a preview. Sort of like people are fighting back. So,
But it's one thing for people to fight back, and if you paid for a ticket to write something on your personal blog, I have no problem with that. But there's an agreement. There's a pact between the news media and theatrical journalists and the productions themselves that there's an understanding. You don't do something to us that is out of bounds. We won't do it to you. Now, that's where like the Spider-Man stuff came into play. Spider-Man was in tech for like a year and a half. So, of course, they went and started reviewing previews. But this is literally the first preview performance. Between this and the Kickstarter, everything's just giving me a bad taste in my mouth today.
You know, some people will blame it on the internet, but it's just media in general. You don't want to get beat by your rivals. You know, if your rivals are going to do it, you got to do it. And nobody likes to do it, but you feel like you lose a competitive advantage if you do it. And
that's it exactly.
The classy people get left behind on the sitting on the sidelines. You know.
Unfortunately, you're correct.
Yeah. So The Go-Between, starring Michael Crawford, opened in the West End. Did the critics go early to this one too?
It seems like they followed all theatrical conventions with this one. The British critics did go and review the new West End musical, The Go-Between, starring original Phantom of the Opera and movie Cornelius Hackle, Michael Crawford. Based on a classic novel by L.P. Hartley, Crawford plays Richard Taylor, a man who can no longer hide from the memories of his past. Michael Billington of The Guardian wrote, "The evening rests heavily on Crawford and William Thompson, who are excellent. Crawford, exuding a desiccated sadness, sings Taylor's score beautifully and sculpts each line carefully so that even a banal lyric such as the colors were clearer the nearer I flew to her achieves genuine poignancy." Paul Taylor of The Independent wrote, "The show unfolds as a shimmering web of singing and dialogue. It's scored for a solitary onstage grand piano from which Nigel Lilly coaxes rich orchestral colors. And the musical ideas don't often merge in what could traditionally be described as a number. The glorious exception to this rule is Butterfly, a floaty, twirling song of exaltation. Crawford sings it in a way that piercingly suggests both the vulnerability and the strength that are conferred by remembered rapture. Fiona Mountford of the Evening Standard said, "Too little light on a dark tale, but Michael Crawford gives affecting performance. There are moments to admire in Richard Haynes' production, but the piece needs more power and much better lighting." My boss, Broadway World CEO and editor-in-chief Rob Diamond wrote, "By show's end and a thunderous standing ovation later, I can report that five-plus decades into his career, not only has Michael Crawford not lost a step vocally or in his ability to mine a character, but that he's drawing on that wealth of expertise in stagecraft to create another powerful and unique creation." Now, full disclosure, Rob is literally the president of the Michael Crawford Fan Club, and Broadway World started as a Michael Crawford fan site, but those are still pretty strong words from Rob nonetheless.
All right, let's get into the recommendations.
Yeah, yesterday, Michael Paulson and David Gellis from New York Times published an article about the money behind Hamilton. They went through and chronicled all of the different sources of income that the show had, one from ticket sales, merchandise, the upcoming Chicago production, you know, tours, all these different things. And then they showed who gets the money, producers, where the actors get it, where the authors get it. It's a fascinating long read. And if you're interested in the business of Broadway, this is a must read. I mean, it tells you how much the creative team, Lin-Manuel Miranda and others, will make, how much the producers and investors get. I mean, it's pretty in-depth and it's pretty fascinating. So we'll have a link in the show notes over at Broadway Radio. James, have you had a chance to look at this yet?
Yeah, I read through most of the article. Most of it was not really new news. It's pretty standard the way the most Broadway structured agreements are for how where this money is going to and what's happening with it.
Okay, well, we can not include it if you don't want to.
I think it's really, you know, it's really great to see this broken down into an article that's available to the public. I mean, most public, you're never going to see the workings of a Broadway budget or the offering agreement to participate in a Broadway show. So this is more or less what it is. And it's an interesting read, and especially when the numbers are dealing with much more zeros on the end, it makes it a little bit more exciting, like a larger Mega Millions jackpot. You know, it's like the people who are like, "I'm not going to play Mega Millions. It's only 50 million this week." Like 50 million wasn't going to change their life. You know, so
yep.
All right. Well, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. We will have a couple of Tony-related episodes coming up after this Sunday's broadcast.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending your Thursday with us. And it's only one more day to the weekend. Talk to you then.